My guest, Stephen Dorff, stars in Sofia Coppola's new film, Somewhere. He's been acting professionally since he was 12. His breakthrough films include Power of One and Backbeat, in which he played Stu Sutcliffe, the Beatles' first bass player. In the film I Shot Andy Warhol, he played the transvestite Candy Darling. His other films include Public Enemies, Blade, and John Waters' Cecil B. Demented. In Somewhere, he plays Johnny Marco, a popular actor who is divorced, in between roles, lost and adrift. He has indulgences like his sports car, women, alcohol, drugs, but nothing seems to have meaning. That begins to change when he starts to spend time with his 11-year-old daughter, played by Elle Fanning. Stephen Dorff, welcome to Fresh Air. Now, you've said that you knew that this was a great script, a great screenplay, but I was wondering, how did you know? There's so little dialogue in it. Mm. And I'm not very good at reading plays and screenplays, but I would think that if there's not much dialogue, and it's that what exactly are you reading, and how do you know if it's good or not?
Well, I think I have so much trust in Sofia, you know, as a filmmaker, as somebody that I think in all three of her films before this one has made really special movies, and I think has a pulse for, even though Lost in Translation had more words, it still has a lot of strange pacing. It allows you to feel very intimate within that hotel. I think on this movie she pushes it even further as far as less dialogue, more emotion, telling the story based on moments and vignette scenes and facial reactions, and just going against the rule. I mean, really breaking all the rules down. As far as little things like, you know, one line in the script might say Johnny smokes a cigarette in real time on the couch, you know, in the evening by himself. I didn't know that scene was going to be 5 minutes long, you know. So I don't, you know, there's certain things that she's holding back from me, letting me know as I go. But I love the process. I loved how, I find that scripts in general tend to be too long and tend to be overwritten and, you know, monologues that explain everything. And I love how I think even not the most sophisticated audience in the world will be able to feel what's going on and be able to hear the story in their own heads with maybe how we're conveying it. And that was just the ultimate challenge, which I think makes this film the most challenging of all the films I've ever done, is that I didn't have any tricks as an actor. I didn't have any things that we all rely on. You know, when you give me makeup or you want me to mimic a real-life person, I can do all that stuff, like, very easily, you know, because it's given to me, half of it.
So when you have to smoke a cigarette in real time, in an uninterrupted scene where you're alone with a cigarette and maybe a beer, what does it mean to act in that scene? You're not interacting with anyone. You're not going through a particularly emotional moment. Nothing's happening. Mm. It's not like, oh, you're weeping because, you know, your wife just walked out the door. There's no big emotional moment to play.
Right, and I think that was what the exciting thing was as an actor and as a filmmaker for Sofia. She really wanted you to be this fly on the wall and be in the room with him, almost like you're next to him on the couch. And so the audience, I think, after the first 2 minutes is kind of like, okay. But then you kind of start to think about what he's thinking about, and it's kind of a manipulation. I mean, I found that with the scene in the makeup scene, you know, because as that camera's slowly pushing in, I mean, I had no idea what the shot was that day because I'm under all that plaster.
I'm going to explain what you're talking about. Because
Sorry.
There's a scene where you have to get a plaster cast of your face made.
Yeah.
For the special effects makeup department.
Yeah.
And so you have, you know, you're sitting in the makeup chair and they're putting like Vaseline or something on your eyes and your lips so that the cast doesn't stick to it. And then they're slathering this like plastery stuff all over your face. And at the end of the scene, everybody, you know, the makeup people walk out and you're just sitting alone in the chair, your face completely covered with plaster, and all the only thing left of your senses is two holes for your nostrils so that you can breathe. Mm-hmm. So we can't see you. You can't see the world. And it's almost like a metaphor for how disconnected you've become from everything.
Totally. Yeah.
And all we hear is you breathing, and we hear it for a long time. The camera just like stays on you.
Yeah, it's kind of slowly creeping in, and the breathing, it's almost weird by hearing just the breath, and then you hear this kind of empty phone ringing in the background. It's like, where'd everybody go? Did they go to lunch? I mean, as this thing's hardening on my face, it was very it's a very claustrophobic feeling anyway, because I've had to do one of those. Any actor that's probably done a special effects movie or a comic book movie in this day and age probably had a face mold done. And it's pretty awful, you know, feeling. But I love that scene because I remember the first time I'd seen it with a big audience was in Venice, and it doesn't get much bigger than that. And the whole audience was about 700 Italians breathing with me, and it was very, very effective scene. A lot of people tell me that's one of their favorite scenes. I don't know why.
But. No, it's a good scene, and then you know after you get the mask that they've made from the cast of your face, it's your older self. The character has to age in the film that you're making. Mm-hmm. What's it like for you when the special effects people bring you your old man face?
Well, you know, it's very easy to play once they give you all this stuff, you know. And again, I think it's a metaphor of Johnny looking at himself saying, if I don't slow down, this is what I'm going to look like, you know. So they went a little extreme with the old age makeup there, and I think it's like supposed to be in my 90s, you know, and they did such a good job. And again, this is how it really feels like as an actor when you go to get a head cast. These are the guys that do it. They're not actors. These are the real guys. So again, the scene feels very real. So everything like Sophia, every situation she put me in, I never felt like I was acting. And that's what I think I had to find, because if I'd acted too much, to go back to that cigarette scene, or, you know, if I'd been mugging for the camera, or one little subconscious thing became conscious, I think it would have unraveled the whole movie that Sophia was trying to make. So it was a very delicate balance, you know, and a lot of responsibility on my part. I think that's what the challenge was.
A good deal of Somewhere is shot in the hotel, the Chateau Marmont in L.A., and you actually spent some time there, right? Sofia Coppola implied that you have a story about having stayed there or lived there.
Yeah, well, when I finished Backbeat, I was 19. I think I had just turned 20, and I got back to L.A., and it was weird. You know, you go spend 4 months in Europe, and you know, you come home, and I didn't have an apartment, so I didn't have any real loins except for my family to go back to their house. And I was like, well, no, I'm 20. I want to check into the Chateau Marmont, you know. And I had had a photo shoot, I think, my first big photo shoot, Bruce Weber, around that time, and at the Chateau. And so I kind of went over there, and I checked in, and I thought it was going to be for a week. And there was a real estate agent that was supposed to show me some apartments, and you know, I had a budget I was working on, but I didn't really pay attention to any of those things, as I never did, it seemed like. I always went from movie to movie because I felt like I wanted to live and spend money. I didn't really want to save money, and I don't know why, but I look back and I had a lot of fun. And ultimately, I stayed at the Chateau for about 4 weeks and got a big bill and ran out of money. And at the time, I didn't understand the concept of, I said, well, yeah, but Backbeat paid me this, and they said, yeah, but Stephen, after you pay your agent, your lawyer, your taxes, you know, you're left with this. And have you seen your hotel bill? And I said, no, maybe I should look at it. And I didn't realize that when you stay in a hotel for that long, you know, you have friends come join you. You kind of host the party every night, or the dinner party. So, you know, I'm paying for everything. And I realized
room
it
service.
Can add up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it can add up every time you have a coffee. Or So, you know, it was a good lesson to learn. But I love the Chateau. I did have moments there. I then ultimately had my, I think, 21st birthday party there, which ended in a big gymnastics, synchronized swimming party in the pool. But ultimately, I do my underwater tea party with Elle Fanning in. And so there's been all these moments. You know, I guess also growing up in Los Angeles, it was a hotel I always looked forward to going to and getting to. I remember being in the Valley and wanting to just get over the hill was a big thing for me. I want to get to Hollywood, you know.
I want to play a clip from the movie I shot Andy Warhol. And you played Candy Darling in this, a transvestite formerly known as Jimmy, who eventually starred in some Warhol films. And I shot Andy Warhol is about Valerie Solanas, who shot Andy Warhol. And it's also about the whole Warhol scene. And this is the scene where you and Valerie Solanas first meet. She's an aspiring writer who's actually been prostituting herself to get money. And she, in this movie, she's really hoping that Warhol will give her her big break. And when he doesn't, she ends up shooting him. So this is the movie where you meet each other, and you meet through a mutual friend named Stevie, played by Martha Plimpton. And Stevie and Valerie Solanas are walking in the park when Stevie sees you, Candy Darling, formerly known as Jimmy. Here's the scene.
Jimmy, hey. Jimmy, this is Valerie. Valerie, Jimmy.
Hey.
I'm called Candy now.
You're a guy? My God, I thought you were a lesbian.
Thank you. A lot of people say that. May I have a cigarette?
Yeah. So you live around here?
Who lives? Natalie Wood, Rebel Without a Cause.
I need a room.
Try the Hotel Earl. Comfort and convenience for the modern girl.
That's a great scene. Did you understand transvestites before taking the role?
Like, not really. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I remember being with at a dinner with Mary Harron and Lily Taylor.
Mary Harron's the director.
Yeah, downtown. And my biggest fear was I only had 3 days. You know, I don't know if they were talking to somebody else or what, but I know that when the idea came for them to offer it to me, I had only 3 days before I started shooting. And that was worrisome for me, and I kept telling Lily, you know, I don't think I have the time, Lily. I mean, I can. And I came to New York with a beard, and I couldn't have been more of a testosterone young guy, and I did it. And I was in the Royalton Hotel walking in heels. I was nared. My body was nared, which is when you rub that cream and all the hair comes off. I was waxed. My eyebrows were waxed. The one thing that I didn't want to do was take hormones, because obviously that's how kind of Candy got in trouble with her health in the first place, and I just didn't want to do that.
How did it change, if at all, your sense of gender, of what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a transvestite, to play Candy Darling?
Well, you know, the biggest thing was it was one day, it was a private moment I had, you know, and it was actually right after that scene. We were shooting that scene, I want to say, in Washington Square Park, or one of these little parks downtown, and I remember going to the bathroom. I had to go to the bathroom, and we didn't have a lot of trailers. It was a very teeny little movie, and so I walked by myself. I didn't think to bring a PA or somebody. I walked by myself to the public bathroom in the park, and I walked in there, and I was standing at the urinal, and I always wanted the real clothes. I wanted the garters. I wanted the whole thing, because I wanted to feel what it's like to get dressed every day as Candy Darling, what the time, the effort she would put into this kind of commitment that she made. And I was about to go to the bathroom, and there was a strange guy just staring at me in the mirror, you know, and I don't know if he was a homeless guy or what, but he looked at me like he wanted to beat me up. And I looked at him as Stephen, even though I was, you know, wanted to protect myself. I was like, what? And I looked at him, he looked at me, and then he walked away. And then I looked at myself, and I was obviously in character mode, and I had to get through all these clothes to get to my thing, to go to the bathroom, and I realized at that point, every time Candy probably had to go to the bathroom, it was a constant reminder of what she was. And I thought there was an incredible sadness and depth to that moment that I had experienced, that that's kind of where I went with what I was feeling inside once all this great stuff, again, like, cheats were given to me, makeup, shoes, hair. It was very easy for me to then copy that voice and fill it with this kind of sadness.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Stephen Dorff, and he's starring in Sofia Coppola's new movie, Somewhere. Sofia Coppola said that she was thinking of you when she wrote the role of Johnny Marco, which she gave to you in her new film, Somewhere. She said she didn't base the character on your life, but she was thinking of you when she wrote the role. What do you think she was thinking of when she was thinking of you?
I don't know. I mean, she explains that she's always thought of me as that there's a sweetness there, you know, and she hadn't seen it in my movies in a long time. And I think she wanted, because this character is flawed and is kind of reckless that in his heart, in his mind, that she wanted a certain sweetness to Johnny, she's explained, and a certain vulnerability that hopefully makes you want to root for him. So what I tried, I think Sophia probably, that was one thing she's explained to me, but we were always friendly. We were always very close, you know, through our mutual friend Zoe Cassavetes. These were two girls that I really respected and liked and were my friends. You know, I never dated them. There was never any weird story in the press. We were just friends, and we had mutual friends, and you know, there was all these other things, too. In a weird way, the Coppolas have always kind of been there for me, whether it was getting a call from Francis, my favorite filmmaker of all time, when I was making a not-so-good movie in Toronto and I was depressed, I would get a call out of nowhere that Francis wanted to talk to me. Well, I had never gotten a phone call like that before. So it was, you know...
But what did he want to talk to you about?
He wanted to send me a script, the movie he was thinking of directing, an experimental movie, and asked if I would read it. It's like, yeah. You crazy? I'll do whatever you want me to do, Francis. I'll be in Napa tomorrow. I'll even leave the set of this movie and get sued to come to see you. You know, I was kind of... So immediately my day was much brighter after that, and I went to Napa, and I spent a couple of weeks working with Francis on this experimental film where we shot some footage. Ultimately, the film was Youth Without Youth, a film he made, and Tim Roth ended up playing the part. But it always meant a lot to me that he came to me first, and he wanted me to play a 70-year-old man, which at the time was five years ago. You know, I needed the makeup I had in Sophia's movie, and then maybe I could have done it. But it was a great gift to work with him so intimately. And then, you know, I was bummed when I didn't get the part. He wrote me this beautiful letter. But, you know, it was from early on, Francis was a supporter of my work. Sophia was very supportive. I was supportive of her. I don't know why else I was in her head. She does explain that she was writing a different movie, though, and I was in her head, and then the Johnny Marco character kind of wanted his own movie.
Well, Stephen Dorff, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's nice to have a nice conversation.
Stephen Dorff stars in the new film Somewhere. It opens in select cities this Wednesday and later opens wider. You'll find links to clips from the film on our website, freshair.npr.org, where you can also download podcasts of our show. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Henry Baldonado, Joan Tui Westman, Sam Brigger, John Myers, John Sheehan, Lauren Krenzel, and Heidi Simon. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with a track from the musician, singer, songwriter, and painter known as Captain Beefheart. He died Friday at the age of 69 of complications from multiple sclerosis. His birth name was Don Van Vliet. His music was steeped in the blues and the avant-garde, and he kept his life surrounded by mystery. This track is from the Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band 1970 album, Lick My Decals Off, Baby.
I want to, God, Lord knows I've got to suit up Dr. Dog.